Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Happy Monday to you. Always so great to get back to doing what we love to do here on a Monday. And we're very grateful that you are here with us. First hour, we're going to talk about the theology of the body. This is a big deal in Catholic circles and has moved out beyond Catholic circles over the course of the last 30, 40 years, but maybe picking up steam, particularly in the last couple decades. Theology of the body, really a Catholic response, or the Catholic Church's response, building on the work of primarily the teaching of Pope John Paul II to the whole modernist sexual revolution thing. This is the Catholic response to it. And for that reason, sometimes controversial, sometimes not, but I think very, very helpful. Here to help us talk about the theology of the body, Emily Dineny, one of our favorite apologists. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Cy, how's it going?
Now, why do you laugh like that? You don't think you're one of our favorite apologists? You're one of our favorite people.
No. I believe you. I believe you. It's just weird hearing you say that.
Really? The modifier apologist, or just that you're our favorite? I see. But you are a social media apologist here at Catholic Answers. That is correct, is it not?
Yep, it is.
Yeah, so you're trying to straighten out the social media world's theology. Good luck to you on that, Emily. Congratulations on getting the job. Fix the internet. All right, so the theology of the body, I want to know about Gen Z and their interest in the theology of the body. And is it a healthy interest, or is it maybe for the wrong reasons? That is, we keep hearing multiple things about Gen Z, including that they're withdrawn from each other. Men and women are somewhat withdrawn, maybe they're afraid of these topics, or they're certainly not dating or out there in the way earlier generations were, maybe dressing more conservatively, but maybe that's their more modest, maybe that's their more insecure and worried. So is there an embrace of theology of the body among Gen Z, and is it healthy or unhealthy?
I would say there is a slight embrace. I've noticed, even with the church's teaching on contraceptives and natural family planning, there's a lot of people that are embracing the church's vision on that, and they're secular, so they don't even know that that's the church's vision, but they've just come to understand, injecting myself with, these hormonal contraceptives is not good for my body. And so they've started using natural family planning as a way to kind of space their births out, not realizing that they can kind of thank the Catholic Church for how promoted that's become, I guess, in today's culture. But even with things regarding modesty, the New York Post just uploaded an article about how there's a lot of younger women who are shying away from the kind of trend of wearing leggings and super, super tight clothing because they feel insecure about their bodies and they don't like the fact that their body is exposed for anybody to see, which, I mean, in the Catholic worldview, we would say, well, it's about our body being so magnificent and wonderful that it is owed respect and honor in the way that we clothe it. It's not something we should be ashamed of. It's not something we should feel the need to, insecurity about. So even though some of the effects might look similar to how a Catholic might approach modesty, right? Some of these women feel the need to cover up their bodies completely because they are insecure about them. I don't think it's coming from the right place, unfortunately. But I will say, I think people are heading in the right direction, God willing.
All right. Again, if you'd like to talk with us, maybe I said again, but I don't think I gave out the number. If you'd like to talk with us about theology of the body, whatever your age, whether you're Gen Z or... look, I don't know the things. 888-318-7884. I know there's baby boomers. I know there's Gen Z. There's a lot of things in between. I don't care what you are. If you would like to talk about the theology of the body, 888-318-7884. So describe to me, if whatever age the person is, if someone made a healthy embrace of the theology of the body, what would they be embracing? And maybe how is it different from the hookup culture, the contraceptive culture, the sexual revolution culture? What's actually different in the theology of the body that people would be accepting?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, John Paul II is really trying to build on how God intended creation to be. And so we see in the opening of Genesis, when God finally creates man and woman, that they are created fully good in God's image. And it's not until they are tempted by the serpent and eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil that they come to the realization that they are naked. And it says they felt ashamed because of their nakedness. And so they went and they hid themselves and they covered their bodies. So I think that's where the root of all of this began. I mean, of course, with any sin, but I think in regards to shame of our bodies in particular, really, really explicitly comes from the garden. And as I think there's been times throughout the church's history where just because of the culture, you know, people of sexuality, the body, this was all very much a private matter, and it certainly is. But the way that even the secular culture kind of regarded the body was in a similar vein. It was something that, you know, was personal, it was private. We don't parade it. We don't talk about these things. We don't talk about our sexual lives because that's immodest. And unfortunately, you know, we come to the 50s, 60s, 70s, especially with the sexual revolution. Now more and more people are trying to free themselves from this perceived, idea that religion is working to oppress us, and that religion is kind of this fuel for being ashamed of the body. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I won't say that there certainly haven't been people, you know, claiming religiosity as a way to kind of fuel some of that mentality at times. But I think John Paul II is really trying to address that idea that, no, it's our bodies are so good. It's not that they're dirty or that they're evil, as, you know, the Gnostics might have claimed thousands of years ago. It's that it's so good that it deserves proper honor and respect and reverence. And so that really was the culture, the church's reaction to the culture of the time. And I think it was much needed, and it's done a lot of good for not just the church, but the world at large. So, yeah, the church would say that our bodies are created in God's image. We are both, you know, we have a soul, we have a spiritual component to ourselves as human beings, but we also have a physical component. We have a body. And Christ, God, assumes a human nature and assumes a physical body. So in some ways, in the incarnation itself, God is truly redeeming our humanity, not just our souls, but our bodies as well. And so our bodies are something that we should take joy in, that we should take, you know, not necessarily pride, but we shouldn't feel ashamed. We shouldn't feel this need to kind of get out of our bodies, to crawl out of our skin. And so the church would say that is where all of our kind of teachings on sexuality and kind of the morality that comes with sex, with modesty, that this is rooted in the body's goodness, not in something that we should be ashamed of. So I don't know if you want me to get deeper into specifics about the church's teachings on these things and kind of how they diverge from a lot of modern societies, but yeah, that's kind of the premise of where it all starts.
I'll tell you what, since you offered, I'd give you a couple minutes before the break if you'd get a little bit deeper into it, because what you describe strikes me as beautiful, but I think a lot of people reject it because they just kind of maybe... can't accept that society has it wrong about sex. And so that you know, I always think of the TV show Friends, which is probably they made that before you were born or something. I don't know. But okay, you look at the way they approach sex, that's the modern way. And people just go, well, if it's on Friends, it must be okay. It seems crazy to them that we would be criticizing that.
100%. Yeah, that's true. And I would say, though, a lot of this is due kind of, you mentioned Friends, due to media, due to social media and entertainment. It kind of has normalized this idea, you know, hookup culture, one night stands, things like that, which, you know, I mean, statistically, these things aren't happening as frequently as you're seeing them happening in movies and TV shows. But it's normalizing it and convincing, especially younger people, that this is just what you do when you're an adult. But when you look at studies actually examining how these choices affect you and affect the people around you, they're negative. I mean, studies showing that teenage girls, especially who engage in premarital intercourse, that they are more likely to be depressed and have anxiety. And so, but it's not just that, right? So the church would obviously teach, and I think hopefully most people know this, although when I was teaching high school students, there were a few people that didn't know this. The church believes that sexual intercourse is reserved between a man and a woman in the boundaries of marriage. And that's because, not that sex is bad, but that it is a beautiful thing. And it's really an expression of the most ultimate love that you could have with another person, which is, I give my entire self to you. And it's only until you take the marital vows where you vow to be faithful to this person, to be, you're freely giving yourself to this person fully, and you're intending to be fruitful in this love. It's only in taking those vows that you truly do mean what you're saying when you engage in that action with somebody, which is, I give my total self to you and I receive you just as you are completely. So the church would say, because of what you're saying ultimately through your bodies when you're engaging in sexual intercourse, that only can be true when you're actually married to this person. Otherwise, you're telling a lie with what you're doing. And We know what happens when people don't engage in sexual intercourse with somebody that they're married to. We know the consequences of that, whether they get pregnant out of wedlock and now they're considering abortion, or potentially this child abandons the mother. And so now this child is brought up in a single mother household, which, I mean, just look at all of the studies done in absent father households with children. It's very, very clear that children who grow up without a present father in the home are faring worse across all types of matters, emotionally, physically, financially. So I would say, when you look at the effects of how somebody lives, if they're living contrary to the church's teachings on where sexual intercourse belongs, it's pretty clear that these consequences are not good. And if people did follow the church's vision for sexuality, I would argue the world would be a very much better place. Families would be more stable. Kids would grow up in homes where the parents are together. They love one another. They're committed to one another. They're not experiencing divorce or a father absent from the home. And they're not being killed through the violent act of abortion either. So
there you go. Maybe we'll talk a little bit. We got a couple of folks on the line. More lines are open. If you'd like to talk about theology of the body, which really has to do with the Catholic Church using a language, I think it's not a new teaching. Except that in some ways it addresses new realities in the way people are living, but more it's an update in the way the church speaks about these things so that modern people can hear the teaching of Jesus Christ and the revelation of God and the precepts of reason on human sexuality. So it's a defense of the tradition in a non-traditional way, in a new way. And so if you have questions about the theology of the body, if you have questions about human sexuality from the perspective of the Catholic Church, you are, and the person of Jesus Christ, we'll do our best to answer that. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool and your homeschool co-op, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
Alexian Brothers is a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live, For 800 years, these Catholic brothers have offered a prophetic and daring response to the gospel, serving Christ in the sick, the poor, and the dying. Is God calling you to be a courageous disciple? If you feel called to total self-giving as a religious brother in the mission of Jesus, call our vocations office at 847-264-8703. That's 847-264-8703. AlexianBrothers.org.
This is Father Lawrence Liu. Catholic radio is a precious gift because it places a Catholic voice in your homes, in your cars, wherever you might be. St. Dominic would pray as he walked and as he traveled throughout the length and breadth of Europe. Now, as we travel and wherever we go, Catholic radio can help us to keep our minds focused on the things of God.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Here we are defending that old oppressive Catholic Church that tells people sex is for within the context of marriage, children benefit from marriage, modesty and chastity are important values, all those things, because God loves you and he made you that way. That's what we're saying. But if you disagree, you're welcome to call. We're talking theology of the body this hour with Emily Dineny, 888-318-7884. Emily is our social media, was one of our two social media apologists. And if I just may say this, Emily, thank you so much to our donors who have supported us. We tell you all the time, we want to be everywhere where we can reach people, and you made it possible for us to have social media apologists. It's a position I don't think any other organization in the world has, and we are delighted to be able to offer that and help the internet not be so dumb about Jesus and his church. 888-318-7884. Emily, anything you want to say before I go to the calls, or can I just go to the phones?
Let's get to it. I'm excited.
All right. We're talking theology of the body. We're talking Catholic Church's response to the sexual revolution. First up is Brian in Omaha, Nebraska. Brian, we're very glad you're here. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. I had a question on alterations, markings, or things like piercings and tattoos in relation to the body as man is made in the image of Christ. And so is alteration, or are alterations of that nature considered some form of heretical or something of that nature? Can you give me some information on that?
Yes, I would be happy to. Thanks for calling in, Brian. So I think the first passage that people like to point to when it comes to marking the body is in Leviticus, right? Because when God is kind of commanding the Israelites about certain things that they should avoid doing, abstain from doing, one of the things that's mentioned is marking of the body. But there's also other things mentioned in this law that he's issuing, which is like, you know, don't eat pork. And so there are certain commands that are issued that have to do with morality, right? Not killing, not stealing. But there are also some commands issued that don't have to do with morality per se, but they're a ceremonial law. And the reason that God issues these commands is because he wants the Israelites to be a set apart people, a set apart nation from the surrounding nations that worshiped pagan and false deities. And there were some groups of individuals who did scar the body, mark the body in affiliation with their false religion. And so God calls them to be set apart by not doing that. So it's very obvious externally that they are not associated with these individuals who worship pagan gods. And so the church would say that Levitical command regarding not marking of the body, that is no longer something in play in the same way that Catholics can eat bacon, right? And we're not sinning by eating bacon. But when it comes, but there's another thing that needs to be considered when it comes to tattoos, piercings, dyeing your hair, makeup choices, like all of these kind of external ways that you can adorn your appearance, which of course is modesty. And so I would say that if you are living in a specific place where tattoos, piercings are abnormal, are unusual, that it would cause you to stick out like a sore thumb and to draw tons of unnecessary attention, that is something that probably should be avoided out of prudence, because we want to not be somebody that, you know, is drawing attention to ourselves unnecessarily. But when it comes to, I mean, I would say in most of America, having a small tattoo on your arm, which could be covered if you wanted it to be, that's not something that is going to attract unnecessary attention most of the time. And so I would say there's a few things to consider. The first would be what I just mentioned. The second would be exactly what you're choosing to do to your body. And, you know, it's one thing to get a tattoo of maybe your mother's name who passed away. It's another thing to get a tattoo of, you know, a symbol or something that could be associated with another religion, or which is a little bit scandalous, right? Like a bad word or something like that. So I would say it takes some prudence. I would say if you have specific questions, you could talk to your parish priest and ask his thoughts on the issue. But a general rule of thumb I would say to consider is, would this be attracting undue attention to myself? Is what I'm putting on my body something that respects the body, that's not going to scandalize other people? And then lastly would be your intent, like why you're choosing to do it as well. Because intentions can be good, right? You're doing something to, you know, honor, like the previous example, your deceased mother, or you're doing something to attract attention to yourself, or because you just want to feel rebellious or something like that, right? So I would say there's a few things to consider, but does that help your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like some of the things you said also had to do with living in concordance and obviously not being scandalous, you know, not trying to mislead others. But yeah, that answered a lot of my questions. I appreciate it.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Brian.
Go ahead and get that dolphin on your ankle, Brian. I'm just kidding. I'm only joking. That would look good in Omaha, Nebraska, wouldn't it? Dolphin on the ankle. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We're talking theology of the body, the Catholic Church's teaching for the modern world on sexuality, rooted in the teaching of Jesus Christ himself. Kelsey is in Charleston, South Carolina. Awful glad you're here with us, Kelsey. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. So I am currently an OCIA, so is my fiance. I grew up pretty traditionally Anglican, and I just very recently realized that, you know, that wasn't the true church. So we're kind of making a last-minute switch before the wedding, and through all of my pre-cana and OCIA prep, one of my deacons got back to me about my paperwork in OCIA today, and he emailed me asking if I was cohabitating because I had checked the box marked for it. With somebody I wasn't married to. And I just responded, yes, I am. I didn't want to give, you know, too much of an explanation over an email. And he went on to say, I need to speak with the parish priest at my parish I'm getting married at. I need to speak with the priest in charge of OCIA because I'm getting married at a different church. And so I looked it up. I was like, does cohabitation, you know, mean that you're, because we're celibate, but we are living together, just the economy, Charleston's expensive. I have two dogs that I rescued. I can't move in with my parents. He offered, to give you a little backstory. So I looked it up and it said cohabitation could, in at least in the Catholic Church, meant a little bit more on the lines of a sexual relationship as well. And so I was wondering, one, should I have specified? Two, I know that celibate cohabitation still does take away from marriage, but I would love to hear your insight on what it does take away from marriage. And then I'm about 8 months away from my wedding. I'm a full-time student. I can't not live with him. So I was just wondering if there's anything I can do to preserve that even further, because we're already not engaging in sexual intercourse together, anything that could, you know, send us off the deep end. So I was just wondering if there's anything else that I could do to preserve the, you know, the magic of marriage and what God intended whenever two people joined in holy matrimony.
Emily?
Yeah. Thank you, Kelsey, for calling in. I really appreciate the question. And I know that that might be hard to kind of ask, especially on a radio. So I appreciate you calling in because I know there's certainly people listening that are wondering the exact same thing. So, yeah, the church would, in a general sense, it would shun people cohabitating before marriage. It would discourage it and reject it because, as you kind of pointed at, right, for people who cohabitate, it does lend a message to one another and to people outside of your relationship about something regarding marriage that is not in the proper context because you aren't quite married yet, right? So when you're living with someone, it's very intimate. You're sharing a space with them day and night. If you're sleeping in the same room, which you asked for some tips, so I would say if you are sleeping in the same bed with this individual, that would definitely be completely rejected. It would be very wise if you had to cohabitate, which would mean you literally had no other option financially except to be homeless, to live with this individual. If you had to, then you need to have separate bedrooms, separate sleeping spaces. You should not be sleeping in the same bed with one another.
Can you?
Because that does...
Can we finish on the other side, Emily? I'm sorry, the music just started to play. Kelsey, I hope you'll hang on. This is a perfect theology of the body question, and we'll get a little conversation between you and Emily when we come back, if you're up for that. If you've got a question about sexuality, from the Catholic perspective, or a challenge, 888-318-7884.
The world has a lot of questions about Catholicism. It's a big faith, and it deserves a big book of answers. Well, now it has two. Get the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, and have 300 clear, reliable Catholic answers right at your fingertips whenever something comes up at work, with friends, or around the dinner table. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers, Volume 2, at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Want to be a more powerful witness for Christ? One of the most powerful evangelization tools you can acquire is, in fact, courtesy. The apostolate of courtesy is just the message the church needs in this time of diminished social grace. Inspired by St. Francis de Sales, author Robert Grieving shows how everyday manners, whether in conversation or emails, can make us powerful witnesses for Christ. Get the apostolate of courtesy today at shop.catholic.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. I have my own personal theory. I'll run this by Emily in a minute. Emily Dineny, our guest social media apologist here at Catholic Answers. And my theory is about the Catholic Church's, and Jesus' own, Jesus' teaching on sexuality, on marriage, on family, and the way that that is then expressed over the centuries in the Catholic Church. My theory is this, that that's one of the major things that repels people, and it's one of the major things that attracts people. It's both at the same time. And so one of the most important things we can do as Catholics is explain it and defend it. Explain what the church teaches calmly and be as convincing as we can, and then defend it when people attack it. Because if I had to defend the sexual revolution and the consequences that everyone can see with their own eyes of the sexual revolution, or at least with their own intellect, I wouldn't want to defend it because it's indefensible. What's been done to the family, what's been done to women, what's been done to the status of children. Certainly, look at the condition of young men in our society. Would you defend any of that? But if I was given the opportunity to defend what Jesus says about human sexuality, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, how many days are there? 365 days a year. Anytime, anywhere, I will take that side of the argument. So if you would like to engage in that conversation, you're welcome here. 888-318-7884. We are talking with a lovely interlocutor from Charleston, South Carolina, Kelsey, a very serious person in OCIA, coming towards the Catholic Church, preparing for marriage, abstaining, as the church would advise from, or as the church would teach, before marriage, from sexual relations. But because of expenses and two dogs, at least that's the way it sounded to me, for expenses and two dogs, living in the same house with her future husband. Emily, you were in the midst of addressing whether this was a good idea or a bad idea, or what advice you might give.
Yes. Yep. Thank you, Cy, for the reminder. So, yes, cohabitation is not, it is completely discouraged by the church for a number of reasons. I elaborated on the first one, which is that by living with someone that is very, that is a very intimate thing in general. And so I would say the first thing is that you are living a life with this individual, which is not completely, like, it's almost a lie in a sense. And the reality is you only live with people when A, they're your roommate, or B, they're your family. But your fiancé should be neither of those things. They're not your family yet because they haven't made that vow to you yet. But they also shouldn't be treated like a roommate, where here's the finances, let's divvy this out. Here's your part of the house, here's my part of the house. You know, here's your part of the fridge. You eat this food, I eat this food, right? And so I feel like when you're cohabitating, you're blurring those boundaries, and it can become messy very quickly, and it's not going to be conducive to your future marriage. And studies show that couples who cohabitate before marriage are much more likely to get divorced than couples who do not live together before marriage. And I know that for a lot of couples, it's become a little bit normalized because in their minds, as you know, this lovely lady mentioned, that she is following the church's teachings when it comes to abstaining from intercourse and sexual relations with her fiance. But there's still a few problems with this. The first is the church also rejects putting yourself in a near occasion of sin. And so if you are around your significant other constantly, and again, when you're living together day and night, there's bound to be just more vulnerability happening in those moments than if you were not living with this person, right? Because, I mean, you have to get dressed, you have to shower, whatever it is. Like, there's random moments where you could see this person where in a setting where if you weren't living with them, you just never would have exposed yourself to that in the first place. So that has to be something that needs to be considered. Sin is not just something that we should, you know, go around the precipice and just like tiptoe around, but it needs to be something we're totally fleeing from and running towards goodness. And in cohabitation, that's just not what's happening. And for the only circumstance that really justifies it is truly, I would not be able to live anywhere else. And this is my only option, which I think in many people's circumstances, they would be able to find an alternative even if it's not comfortable. And then the last thing I want to mention really briefly is the scandal that this causes. You might know yourself, you might know your situation, but people outside of you don't know it. And so when they see that you as a couple that's a Christian living together before marriage, they are likely assuming that you're also engaging in what most people who live together before marriage engage in. And they have no way of not knowing that unless you tell them. And so the church, I mean, the Bible itself tells us that it would be better for a millstone to be tied around our neck and for us to be cast than for us to cause even the little ones to sin and stumble, right? And so we need to do everything in our power to not scandalize other people. And living with somebody else before you're married to them is scandalous. And so my advice to you, sister, would be, I would very much pray and discern with your fiance what the path could be. Even if that means that you do have to live with your parents and the dogs stay with your fiance, or your fiance helps pay for you to live somewhere else with a roommate or something because he can't move out of where he's living. But I would highly, highly recommend that you seriously consider what other options and alternatives you can have, because 8 months really is a long time. And I would say I don't think it's worth putting your souls at jeopardy, potentially the scandal that it could cause, and also just the fact that it is going to take away the magic of you guys both enmeshing your lives together as a married couple, which is supposed to happen when you get married, because that's when you've truly given yourself to this other person and they've done the same. So that's my advice to you. And yeah, I'd love to hear if you have any follow-up questions on that.
What do you think, Kelsey?
No, I mean, I completely agree with everything you say. I get very embarrassed in a sense when I do have to disclose that we do live together. I completely agree. I mean, playing house, it definitely blurs the lines. You had some really good options. I'll definitely look into those a little bit. I'm not sure that, you know, parents or anything else is an option, but no, I really appreciate your thoughts. I'll definitely look into some of that.
Okay.
No, I mean, I think you answered my question. I don't have any follow-up questions. Sorry. I've never been on the air before.
Well, you nailed it.
It's okay.
You nailed it. First time and you nailed it. I'll send you a Catholic Answers book. If there's one that you particularly like, just tell Edgar. If there's not, I'll tell Edgar to send you Secrets from Heaven, which is a beautiful book about the parables and sayings of Jesus. But it's up to you. You just tell Edgar, and he can suggest books to you as well. Thank you so much, Kelsey. I'm moving. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to add one last thing, which is when my husband and I got engaged, we bought a house, and this same thing came up in our conversation, which is, well, it would save us a lot of money if we just moved in together 5 months before the wedding. And, you know, all of our friends and family, they know us. They know we're good Catholics. They know we're not going to be, you know, engaging in anything that we shouldn't be. But I came to the conclusion that the Lord is faithful and he does provide for us. And so even though I was a little bit nervous about finances and it made things tighter, I knew that the Lord would be faithful to us living out our obedience faithfully. And so I'm not saying for you to make any, you know, rash decisions and just like, okay, I'll go be homeless because God will provide. But I do think even if you feel a little bit uncomfortable, you feel like things could be a little bit tight, that I would trust in the Lord. And that's why I would really say, take this to prayer and seriously discern what he's calling you to do. But yeah, God bless you. And I really, really appreciate you pushing past maybe the shame and embarrassment to come and ask us this. God bless you.
What a great call. Thank you. It was very, very helpful to us too, Kelsey. All right, we're going to North Carolina now from South Carolina, Havo in North Carolina. Go ahead with your question for Emily Dineny, our guest.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, Havo.
How you doing? So the reason I'm calling is because I'm Catholic. My wife is not. She's a Protestant. And we were recently at a Baptist service. And the pastor said something along the lines of sex was only valid within the marriage and was for pleasure. And that definition leaves aside or doesn't include the unity part of sexuality, which kind of undermines the discussion around contraceptives.
It leaves out something else too, doesn't it? Isn't there one other thing it leaves out?
What else? Hold on. What am I missing out?
Children?
Children.
Yeah. Havo knows. Havo's like, I knew this whole thing.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
A little bit. Because it's like the definition that he used, sexuality is for enjoyment of the couple, if you will, doesn't leave away children. It leaves away the unity part of the, or it can leave away the unity part of sexuality, which will leave away, or we get away with children, I guess.
Yep. Got
so
it.
Is that what I'm looking for is for like words, you know, how to explain the church stand against contraceptives.
Yes, wonderful. Wonderful. I see your point, Javo. Emily, what would you say?
Yes, well, I'm glad that you picked up on what that Baptist pastor was preaching was not from the scriptures. That's great of you. Yeah, so obviously sex first and foremost is for procreation. Jesus or God tells us to be fruitful and multiply, right? That's what he commands of us. And so that's what the marital act is intended for, just first and foremost. That's what separates the marital act from any other thing that you can engage in with another person that also can unite you and bring you pleasure, right? Like, for example, sharing a meal with somebody is very pleasurable and it does bond you, but you're not going to make a baby from sharing a meal with somebody. You can make a baby by engaging in the marital act with them. And so that's where our kind of first and foremost reason for engaging in marital intimacy, that's what it's intended for. But as you mentioned, it also is unitive. It should be something that is bonding the two spouses. And in the Catholic Church, we believe that every time a married couple engages in the marital act, that they're renewing their wedding vows, the vows and the sacramental graces that they received on the day of their wedding. So it's a very beautiful thing to receive graces and also to kind of renew this sense of I give my whole self entirely to you and I am faithful only to you, and that I hope that our love overflows to the existence of an entirely new person through procreation. So that's the church's vision of sexuality, of the marital act. And yes, most Protestants don't believe in this vision. Many of them, unfortunately, have conformed to, and even Orthodox Christians, unfortunately, have conformed to the world's understanding of sexual intimacy, which, as you mentioned, like this pastor said, is for pleasure, right? Primarily, that's kind of their understanding. And so they use contraceptives. They're okay with sexual acts that aren't open to life. They're okay with even lusting after your spouse. I've heard numerous Protestants say that it's okay to lust after your spouse because you're married to them. And unfortunately, it comes from a very bad misunderstanding of what lust is, of what sexuality is, of God's vision for marriage and sexuality. But that is what the church's vision and beliefs are on the marital act, and that is what is going to further your bond to the most intimate level possible by allowing this act to, yes, unify you, also be open to life, open to the possibility of conceiving a child. And is that going to be pleasurable inevitably? Yeah, it is. But that's not the primary reason that the sexual act exists. Does that help you?
It does. I think it will be worth speaking about the collaboration with God in the creation of a new being in the act, in the sexual act, because it will help them understand what does not happen when you prevent it, if you will.
That's a very good point. Yeah, that essentially you're thwarting God as a partner in the relationship. Am I onto that, Javo?
Yeah, totally.
How about I got to go to the break, but a fantastic call. Thank you very, very, very much. Oh, I love this topic, Emily. We're going to have you on again. All the lines are full.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to get to as many as we can. If Javo would like it, send him a copy of A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. Right back with more on The Theology of the Body with Emily Dineny on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Hi, this is Brother John Bosco Mills. In our world, there are so many words and so many images, And they all have different messages, and they're giving us different messages. We need Catholic radio because we need to hear the voice of truth. And the voice of truth is the one that tells us about Jesus and his church. And Catholic radio gives us that truth.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I feel a little bit disappointed that we don't have more time with Emily because so many people have called to talk about the theology of the body. Just to give you a little reset, first of all, Emily Dineny, our guest, is our one of our two social media apologists, and thank you to our donors for making that possible. You support us, and that makes it possible for us to support them in doing that work. But the question of the theology of the body, or the idea of the theology of the body, is that starting certainly with Pope Paul VI, but really flowering in the papacy of Pope John Paul II, the Church has been trying to teach the modern world the divinely revealed plan for human sexuality in a way that can actually be received by the people of the modern world, not in an old-fashioned way. It's an old-fashioned set of values, an old-fashioned set of teachings, but a new way of expressing it, so it's easier for people to understand what Christ is calling us to. That's what we're talking about this hour. And next we go to Houston, Texas. James is in Houston. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. It's not really much of a question. It's more like a challenge to your guest. I come from a Catholic background, but I'm an adult now. I left the faith. For me, it was just too many rules, too many things that are required of you to do. And sometimes it feels more like, you know, duty. Like you're supposed to do these things. Otherwise, you know, you're seen as the bad guy. But now, as in a... that I'm married and we have kids, challenges more. Right now, my two girls, they're in high school, one's in middle school, and we decided, me and my wife, to put them on birth control because we have to be real. We have to live in the real world. We told them, yes, wait for marriage if that's what you want. We certainly didn't tell them how my parents told me that, hey, if you don't wait to marriage, you're going to burn in hell forever. You know, I don't scare them. And I just feel like the Catholic Church and the teachings, it usually runs off obedience, and that obedience is then backed by fear, you know, and that's just not how I am.
Emily, what do you say to that?
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate you calling in, James, and asking this question, even though, you know, you had some experience with the church and you very well could have just kept scrolling and disregarded our show. I would respond like this. Even if your daughters are put on birth control, there still is a risk that they're going to be pregnant. And so my initial thoughts are, well, I wouldn't even want to risk my teenage daughter, who's still in, you know, middle school, high school, getting pregnant before her education has even been completed. And there's even been studies on this. The term is known as risk compensation for people who have a sort of preventative measure that they can rely on. They're actually more likely to engage in this act than if they didn't have it at all. So by giving your daughters contraceptives, you're actually incentivizing them to engage in this sexual behavior more because they have in the back of their mind, well, I'm using this preventative measure. So the risk is actually lower. But the reality is, anytime you engage in intercourse with another person, there still is a chance that you could get pregnant. But I think beyond this, I mean, the way that I would parent my children is, I mean, I wouldn't want to parent them from fear either, right? And so I would explain to them that sexuality is a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's an enjoyable thing. But the safest way to enjoy it and the healthiest way to enjoy it is with a partner that is committed to you, that loves you, that you don't have to wake up the next day wondering if they're still going to be in bed with you. You don't have to wonder if they're thinking about another woman or if they're going to leave you. That is, and that only happens happens inside of marriage. And so that is the way that I would educate my teenage children on this. It wouldn't be from fear. It would be from a place of love. And I would certainly not be prescribing them something that is going to incentivize them to potentially engage in this action even more and risk them getting pregnant in high school without completing their education. What would you have to say about that?
No, I certainly understand it. I think I heard it from one of my neighbors that I don't know how it went. It's something like down the road of if your son or daughter is going to rob a store, why would you give them a gun? And to me, that sounds completely stupid. Like, you can't compare the two. But like I'm saying before, they're going to do it anyways. I certainly did, even though I was brought up by fear. And now that I'm not bringing them up with fear, they're going to do it anyways. And it's for me, I come from a kind of intellectual point, you know, keep them safe, keep them happy, and just make sure they finish high school. And after that, if they want to get pregnant, that's fine by me. That's their choice. But yeah, I recognize the pattern, or the way you're saying it. I recognize because it's been told to me a lot. I just simply disagree with it. And that's not how I'm going to raise my family. You get what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but I think you're selling your daughter short by saying they're just going to do it anyway, right? Because that's just not true. And actually, sadly, I think a lot of teenage girls feel pressured to have sex because if you're prescribing them birth control, they might be thinking, well, it's normal for me to be engaging with this. If I'm not doing it, there must be something wrong with me. Or if men don't desire me in that way, then maybe I am undesirable. And when your own parents are kind of, you know, feeding you this mentality, that's something that they could take to heart. I think a lot of teenage girls feel very pressured to move on sexually, especially with boys, because they feel this desire to be loved by them. And so they're willing to do things that even they may be uncomfortable doing because they have this desire for love. I would say you as a parent have much more control over this than you realize. You're able to not allow them to be out with boys. You're able to, you know who they're going out with, who they're not, if these people are trustworthy, if they're not. You're able to check their phone, to not allow them to, have this quote unquote freedom to just run off and do things without you knowing about it. And so I would really, really encourage you. I think especially teenage daughters, they need the safety and boundaries of their parents, especially their fathers. They need to know from their fathers that they're loved, that they're desired, that they're chosen, and that they're a safe place to talk to. And they need to understand that they don't need to give up of themselves to teenage boys in order to be desirable. And there are studies that indicate teenage girls that do have premarital sex are more likely to be depressed, are more likely to have anxiety, because especially for a younger person, their brain is just not developed and equipped to deal with that type of emotional and physical intimacy. And so even just from, like, I'm not even talking about the Catholic, like, I'm not even mentioning God. Right. But even from a psychological standpoint, that's not a healthy thing for young girls like that to be engaging in. Nonetheless, the fact that they are going to be forming emotional attachments to these individuals that, you know, may not be in their life a week or a year or a few years from now. And that's also not healthy.
I think some people are shocked to find out that 70% of American high school students are virgins. 70%. I think people think because of, 90210 or whatever. I know that was 100 years ago, but whatever the show is, that students are just wildly engaging in sexual activity. 70% of high school students have not engaged in. So I just want to say that because I do think, Emily, you made the point. Are you selling your daughters short? Are they, if 70% of the other kids are able to do it, why are your daughters the exception? And I don't believe you mentioned the chemical harms of girls on hormones. It's a tremendous burden on the adolescent body that you're asking of your daughters. Emily, I know you wanted to get to more calls, but you guess what's going to happen right now? Can you hear it? Here it comes.
The break.
Music's coming.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
They're playing you off, Emily. They're playing you off. You're done. Emily Dineny, our guest, check her out on social media. Catholic Converts is her handle on the Instagram and the TikTok too, or just the Instagram?
Yeah.
Both? Catholic Converts. I probably ask you that every time you're on, but don't expect I'm never going to remember it. It's never going in. I don't have either of those things on my phone because I'm very, very, very old. Emily, you did a great job. Will you come back and do this again before too long?
I'd love to.
All right. You rolled your eyes when you said that. I'm not sure. Does that mean you would? I'm not sure how to take you sometimes.
I'm very excited.
All right. Yeah. I'm thrilled, I'm sure. All right. We're coming right back. I forgot the topic for the next hour, but it's super good. It's super good. Join us in just a couple minutes. Catholic Answers Live. Super good.